A study ties common viruses such as flu to Alzheimer's and other conditions, but the analysis has limitations, researchers warn. Please stay with us for an exclusive article published in the scientific publication Nature. Please stay tuned for more. An analysis of about 450,000 electronic health records has found a link between infections from influenza and other common viruses and an elevated risk of having a neurodegenerative condition such as Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease later in life. But researchers caution that the data show only a possible connection, and that's still unclear how or whether the infections trigger disease onset. The analysis published in Neuron on January 19th found at least 22 links between viral infections and neurodegenerative diseases. Some of the viral exposures were associated with an increased risk of brain disease up to 15 years of infection. It's startling how widespread these associations seem to be, both for the number of viruses and number of neurodegenerative diseases involved, says Matthew Miller, a viral immunologist at McMaster University in Canada. This isn't the first time viruses have been linked to neurodegenerative disease. Infection with a type of herpes virus has been associated with the development of Alzheimer's, for instance. And a landmark study published in Science last year found the strongest evidence yet that Epstein-Barr virus is tied to multiple sclerosis. But many of these past studies examined only a single virus and a specific brain disease. To understand whether viruses are linked to brain diseases more broadly, Christine Levin, a biomedical data scientist at the U.S. National Institutes of Health Center for Alzheimer-related Dementias, Maryland, and her colleagues analyzed hundreds of thousands of medical records to look for instances in which a person had both a viral infection and a brain disease on file. First, the team examined records from about 35,000 people with brain diseases and about 310,000 people without, sourced from FinnGen, a large Finnish database that includes health information. The team found 45 significant links between infections and brain diseases and then tested those against more than 100,000 records from another database, the UK Biobank. After this analysis, they were left with 22 significant pairings. One of the strongest associations were between viral on encephalitis, a rare inflammation of the brain that can be caused by multiple types of virus, and Alzheimer. People with encephalitis were about 31 times more likely to develop Alzheimer later in life than were people who did not have encephalitis. Most other associations were more modest. People who had a bout of flu that led to pneumonia were 4 times more likely to develop Alzheimer than were people who didn't develop the flu with pneumonia. There were no pairings that suggested a protective link between viral infection and brain disease. Kristen Funk, a neuroimmunologist at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, who studies the link between herpes viruses and Alzheimer's, said, "I'm very excited they are expanding this research broader than what other studies have looked at." Okay. Ketel Bajornik, an epidemiologist at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in Boston, Massachusetts, and an author on the Epstein-Barr paper in Science, applauds Levine and her colleagues for bringing more attention to the role of viral infections in brain diseases. But he warns that their approach of using medical records could be problematic because they analyzed only infections that were severe enough to warrant a trip to health practitioner. Taking milder infections into account might weaken the associations, he says. The data are also sourced almost exclusively from people of European ancestry, which means that the findings might not be applicable to larger global population, Funk says. Furthermore, she adds, outside Europe, certain viruses are more prevalent, such as Zika or West Nile virus, so the analysis might have missed links between those pathogens and brain disease. Levine acknowledges the limitations of the analysis. The team worked with the data that were available, she says. These limitations also underscore the difficulty of untangling whether a viral infection leads to neurodegenerative disease or whether the disease makes a person more susceptible to infection, the scientists argue. To make it even more tricky, the authors found that the more time that elapsed between the infection and the diagnosis of brain disease, the weaker the link. The body is known to begin changing years before symptoms of brain disease develop and a diagnosis is made. So it's tough to determine which is causing which, he adds. Another plausible theory is that these viral infections might be accelerating molecular changes in the body that were already ongoing, says Cornelia van Dugin, a genetic epidemiologist at the University of Oxford, UK. If future studies add more weight to the connection between viral infection and brain disease, it could offer health officials a tangible way to delay the onset of neurodegenerative disease. Vaccines exist for many other viruses. Because multiple types of dementia are diagnosed late in life, close to the average life expectancy, if clinicians should postpone disease onset by even a couple of years, that could mean that many people might never develop the disease. The scientists suggest it's not very clear that the infections are causing brain disease. But viral infections aren't pleasant. And if there is any link to brain disease, we think we owe it to people to prevent them.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun alaikum. You are listening to Lantern, and we have a new story. The title of the story is The Lion, the Ass, and the Fox are the three personalities in our today's story. A lion, an ass and a fox were hunting in company and caught a large quantity of game. The ass was asked to divide the spoil. This he did very fairly, giving each an equal share. The fox was well satisfied, but the lion flew into a great rage over it. And with one stroke of his huge paw, he added the ass to the pile of slain. Then he turned to the fox. "You divide it," he roared angrily. The fox wasted no time to talking. He quickly piled all the game into one great heap. From this, he took a very small portion for himself, such undesirable bite as the horns and hoofs of a mountain goat, and the end of an ox tail. The lion now recovered his good humor entirely. "Who taught you to divide so fairly?" he asked pleasantly. "I learned a lesson from the ass," replied the fox, carefully edging away. Learn from the misfortunes of others.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum. This is Beat at Your Service. You are listening to Agaribi English Radio, and this is Lantern. A new story, a new perspective, a new day, a new life. Thank you for listening to us. Let's go through the beautiful story of today, which I'm really interested in because in my own personal life, I have a special mindset that I'm really rebellious about experience. I mean, using the experience of other people. There are always people before us and maybe after us who we go through an experience which may be useful for our lives. The thing I want to tell you is that you shouldn't think that way that, okay, we have to experience everything by ourselves. Sometimes you have to stop this mindset, think, learn, and believe that maybe other people's experience may be helpful too. But, you know, it's not always that easy, in my opinion. But sometimes you have to consider the cost of not going through another people's experience. For example, in the story of the tiny smart fox of today, we saw that the cost of experiencing a new thing was really high that the fox decided to actually choose the experience of another animal. This is the same about our own life too. You know, when we are children, we learn and fail all the time. We fall off bikes, we may get hurt and, do something incorrectly, tell someone what we shouldn't tell them, and so on. But that's just what kids do. As adults, we tend to move into areas of core competency. Sigh a breath of relief, like, hooray, no more feeling like I'm constantly falling at every day and everything. But this is exactly the problem. When you think you are tangled with the pride of being an adult, you will face the problem of avoiding using other people's experience because you fear this failure. You fear like being failed in every aspect of your life. But you shouldn't forget that. We all shouldn't forget that. This is life. Life is a test. And you cannot pass a test unless you understand that you have to learn new things in new level lives.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
You know, fortunately, in the internet age, it's not just easy to learn, but also to learn from other people, so you'll have a model to go from and you won't feel so alone in your endeavors. Like, I'm going to tell you one of the most important tips of using other people's experience. Books. Yeah, exactly. The best way by far that I myself have found to connect with the experiences of others is to read what they have written. I mean books. Articles are good too, but I find that you really get to know a person through a book. As you journey with that person page by page, you can fully appreciate your experience, stop, reflect, think, and apply lessons learned to your own life too. And this is the most important part. There are many books in this area, I don't know, such as many special and famous poets of all time like Sa'di, I don't know, Hafez, Rumi, and so on, that we have and we can go read their books. But also, one of the most important way to use the experience of other people is the Holy Quran, a religion, you know? And in connection with the importance of using the experiences of others, Imam Ali alayhi salam, peace be upon him, says, wisdom is the preservation of experiences. You know? وَالْعَقْلُ هِفْثُ التَّجَارِبِ. It means that if you are too wise, if you can use your brain correctly, you have to understand that you cannot go through any experience by yourself. You have to preserve the experience of other people. You have to learn them. You have to save them. You know, a human being finds the right way to face future events and doesn't fall into error in similar cases in compared to the past experiences. So, it doesn't mean that you are weak if you are using other people's experience. Sometimes, because I don't know, it is about prejudice, pride, or whatever it is, we feel like we cannot use other people's experiences because we are weak. No, it's not a weakness. It's a power. It's a power to know that you don't have a lot of time in this world. Your time is limited, so you have to use it wisely. And this wisdom comes from using other people's experiences. So, don't forget to read books. And don't forget that this experience that is written here in that book by 1,000 years is so much more than what you can go through in your limited time in this life. Don't be rebellious. Sometimes you have to stop, reflect, and think, and choose the best way. Thank you for listening to this episode. It was all the time we had for today. I bid you farewell.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillah tatma'innul qulub.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life for IRIB English Radio. I am Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol, and one of my specialties is in enhancing the style for living. And my talk is based on the Quran and Islamic tradition. In this episode of the program, I will be going over a new theme, which is an important topic. This topic is really important, that really applies to so many people, and that is the topic of why I feel empty. Basically, for a long time, we may struggle by this issue, that since we are faithful Muslims, we are always told that since we are the believers who know Allah and are supposed to be attached and connected to Allah, we shouldn't have to feel sadness, or that we shouldn't feel that emptiness. This is the kind of principle and teaching that they have been grown up with, that we think by remembrance of Allah, we have to have peace and true happiness. But on the other hand, we sometimes find out that we cannot reconcile that principles, what we feel, that for a great portion of our time, we feel that emptiness, valueless, and futility within ourselves. By feeling emptiness, I mean that we in many times may feel that we are so disappointed, that we think we have no energy to go on in our life, we have no motive to pursue our goals, have no, for example, incentive to even remain alive. As a result, there is this question, that how someone who is a good worshipper of Allah and is connected to Him feels that hole inside his heart, and why many of us stumble in our quest to fill this hole and our try to cure this sense of emptiness. When people are confronted with that emptiness and discouragement, unfortunately, they attempt to cure it by some sort of illegal worldly means, like chatting with an opposite gender through social network, or soothe their feeling of dissatisfaction by being angry to their family, or by smoking and the like. They do so because they think their faith, belief, and their connection with Allah should have distanced them from these bad and unpleasant feelings. And this misconception adds to their feeling of emptiness and persuades their desires to practice those illegal acts. Let me point to the fact here and then continue my discussion. The fact is that we should not suppose that since we are Muslims and since we are attached to Allah, we have to be always courageous, full of desires and willingness and some things like these. Totally contrary. There is no contradiction between being with Allah and being sometimes tired and exhausted with life. Heart, which in Arabic terminology is named al-qalb, means something that changes from one situation to another situation. Qalb in Arabic points to something that is not stable, alters from one situation to another one. Yes, deep in our heart, we are Muslims, satisfied with our faith, and maybe totally confident that Allah is there and can help us. But this does not mean that we should not feel sad and any sort of worries and concern. No one should think that since he is with Allah, his heart should be not broken, he should not be scared, and so on and so forth. Let's have a short break, and I will be back in a minute. I was talking about a dilemma that some people face, that how a heart that is attached to Allah faces many kinds of feelings that we call them unsatisfactory. Here, let me refer to the yardstick here, which is that the feeling of hearts is divided into a stable and a deep feeling, and another part I call it a surface and a short-time feeling. Those whose hearts are connected with Allah, that part of their heart that is deep never changes. And those sorts of negative feelings that they may sense is just related to the surface level of their heart that changes and alters from one situation to another one. Man's heart, even in greatest difficulty and struggle, is still connected to God, and the man knows that Allah is there and can assist him. His degree of faith and belief does not waver, does not become weaker and less. But even though the surface part of his heart may face many forms of challenges and can be subject to many unpleasant reactions. This is what Lady Zainab says in Karbala. At the end of tragic event of Karbala, when Lady Zainab's heart was full of sorrow and grief, he uttered her famous saying and said, "Ma ra'aytu illa jamila." I never seen anything but beauty and elegance. Because Lady Zainab knew that the dreadful and grievous event of Karbala, despite of all its afflictions and tragedy, helped the religion of Allah to become more stable. What Lady Zainab describes as beauty is from that part of her heart that is deep and unchangeable, a kind of firm belief and confidence that would never become shaken. And what makes her to burst into tears is due to another part of her heart that I called a surface part. That since she is a human and has senses and feelings, should normally behave like that. To become sad, to cry, and to weep. As a result, those feelings of emptiness, sadness, and disappointment can be aligned with a kind of calmness and serenity at the same time. But that feeling of being empty, lonely, as I said, is short-termed. Sooner or later will be removed. But that deep and profound feeling of faith that stems from being connected to Allah will still remain unchanged. Imam Ali, in one of his noble sayings, says, "Inna hazi al-qulub tamallu kama tamallu al-abdan." Indeed, your hearts will become tired and disgusted as your body will become tired. Then the Imam adds, "فَابْتَغُوا لَهَا طَرَائِفَ الْحِكَمِ." If you feel so, try to seek for interesting, wise saying for them. Here, as the Imam says, for solving the effect of this source of negative feeling, we have to refer to a kind of enjoyment that is in agreement, of course, with Allah's will and desires. Not every enjoyment is allowed here. What Imam Ali mentioned is one of the examples of this source of enjoyment, which is with regard to wise sayings, maybe some funny jokes. We also can add many other examples like it. And the outcome and the conclusion is that when we face with some kind of unpleasant feeling, we have to be more patient and wait up until it is removed and we go back to the normal situation. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
in the limelight.
There are reports that the EU's largest gas field will be closed soon. The Dutch government is set to stop production at the Groningen gas field later this year. The Dutch State Secretary for Mining has told the Financial Times that the rising risk of earthquakes makes the site dangerous to operate. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, the Dutch government is set to stop production at Groningen gas field later this year. The state secretary for extractive industries, Hans Vigilbrief, has told the Financial Times the site is already producing only a fraction of its capacity and it is very dangerous to keep operating it, according to the official. He told the news outlet, "We won't open up more because of safety issues. I'm not going to do it because it means that you increase the chances of earthquakes, which I don't want to be responsible for. It's very, very simple. Everybody who has some knowledge of earthquake danger tells me that it's really very dangerous to keep on producing at Groningen. I'm quite convinced it's wise to close it down," he continued. The official noted that he plans to shut down the site by October 1st, but this will depend on whether the EU has enough gas after the winter. If necessary, the field might continue to operate until October 2024. There are reportedly about $1 trillion worth of gas reserves at Groningen, which was opened in 1963 and produced over 50 billion cubic meters of gas at its peak 10 years ago. However, because the extraction process led to earthquakes that threatened the homes of local residents, output was eventually cut. Up to 100 drilling-induced tremors have been registered around Groningen annually since 1980s. With roughly 160,000 claims for damage to property field to date, according to the FT. The Netherlands came under pressure from EU authorities to boost production at the site last year, when a drop in supplies from Russia sent gas prices on the continent soaring to historic highs. Although The Hague rejected these calls, it did postpone plans to shut down the field. Its annual output was cut to 2.8 billion cubic meters, as producing more than 5 BCM would heighten the risk of earthquakes, the official added. Russia used to be the largest gas supplier to the EU, accounting for 40% of total EU gas consumption in 2021. Last year, Moscow was forced to halt gas deliveries through the Yamal-Europe and Nord Stream 1 pipelines due to Ukraine-related sanctions. At the end of September, deliveries through Nord Stream 1 stopped completely after the pipeline was sabotaged. Russia continues to deliver gas to certain European buyers via a transit line through Ukraine and the Turkish Stream pipeline through Turkey, but volumes are only a fraction of what they were in 2021. Industry experts warn that the EU, while relatively secure in supplies at the moment due to high storage levels, may face difficulties when the time comes to refill stores for next winter. The website of Oil Price also noted the Dutch government plans to close the Groningen gas field this year, despite Europe's precarious supply position. Groningen is the largest gas field in Europe. The field is dangerous, a government official from The Hague told the Financial Times, and the government has no plans to boost production from it. We won't open up more because of the safety issues, the official said. Production at Groningen has been curtailed substantially, and there were plans in place to phase out production altogether because of increased seismic activity in the vicinity of the field even before the energy crisis began in 2021 in the European continent. As gas prices began to climb in the autumn of 2021 and then took off in the spring of 2022, some began speculating that the Netherlands could keep the field operating to contribute to filling the gap in gas supply left by Russian pipeline deliveries. The Dutch government was skeptical about that from the start and instead suggested production be extended. Although at a minimum rate of some 2.8 billion cubic meters, now this too is being reconsidered. It's very, very simple. Everybody who has some knowledge of earthquake danger tells me that it's very dangerous to keep on. I'm quite convinced it's wise to close it down, the official said. Since 1980s, the Financial Times noted, there have been some 100 earthquakes annually around Groningen, resulting in more than 150,000 claims for property damage. The operator of the field, a Shell Exxon joint venture, was ordered to start reducing output in 2013 with a view to shutting the field down eventually.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means
today I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree though we earn. يا إله كل شيء
ومليك يا رب. This is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah. يا خالق كل شيء وورثا. Today's great tip: don't rely simply on your age when it comes to increasing, strengthening, and powering up our ubudiyya, our servitude to Allah. So, dear listeners, we are talking about ubudiyya, we are talking about the servitude, the obedience, and the worship to the Almighty Allah, the creator of all the worlds and the creator of existence. Now, sometimes in our lives, we come across this idea, this thought that, you know, I'm still young. I have a good 40, 50, 60 years ahead of my life. And so in this facade and this mirage of age, we sometimes have a tendency to not do that which must be done at the present time. It's a kind of procrastination which lasts over multiple years. Of course, one of the things that is directly related to our ubudiyya, our service and our servitude and our obedience to the Almighty Allah, is the concept and the action of asking for forgiveness. Now, every single one of us must ask for forgiveness. Of course, repent for the different voluntary and involuntary errors or sins that we make in our daily lives. Now, of course, this asking for forgiveness is because in reality, committing these sins are a form of disobedience to the Almighty Allah. And being a servant, being a abid, being a worshiper of the Almighty Allah, on our side, it does not befit us to disobey the Almighty Allah. And on the other side, when we look at the Almighty Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the Kind, the Most Quick to Forgive, it is befitting that the Almighty Allah is not disobeyed. So in both ways of thinking about this, the disobedience of Allah is not something that is good. Now, once we have realized that the disobedience of the Almighty Allah is not something that is good, then of course when we do disobey Allah via the committing of sins, whether voluntary or sometimes involuntary, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously, of course we ask for forgiveness for that disobedience. And so here, sometimes we kind of procrastinate and we leave off this asking of forgiveness, of course, which is known as istighfar in Arabic. We leave it for a later date and a later time. When we are young, we continue to do these kind of various things with our lives and, you know, in a very nonchalant, in a very relaxed manner, we sometimes commit errors and we disobey the Almighty Allah. And then we think that, well, I'm still young, I can do these things, and later down the line, I will ask for forgiveness. Of course, this is one of the deceits of shaitan, and we will continue to talk about this idea that age is a deception, and we must all be very careful of this deception if we want to prosper and succeed both in this world and the next.
شربنا على فكري
حبيبي مدامتا
ساكرنا بها من قال
لأن يخلق الكرم
IRIB English Radio.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Yusuf.
I mean, sarcasm, it depends on what you're doing, which is sarcastic. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala uses sarcasm in the Quran. Dhuq, innaka antal azizul kareem, you know that Allah tells them to taste the hellfire and look at you, aren't you noble and powerful? So it would depend on situations, but generally, istihza, mocking people, is completely alien to the tradition. And certainly sarcasm, in certain situations, it might be appropriate. But generally, it's the best to avoid those type situations, making fun of people, mocking people. There's a guy he put up on Facebook mocking Shia imams. He's, I guess, an atheist or something, or doesn't believe in religion. And the CNN interviewed him, and he said, you know, nothing's sacred. Everything is open to mockery. And that's part of the age we're living in. It's going to get worse. It's just part of the time we're living in. Yeats has a famous poem, Easter 1916, "Come, let us mock at the great that had such burdens on the mind and toiled so hard and late to leave some monument behind, nor thought of the leveling wind. Come, let us mock at the wise with all of those calendars whereon, they kept old aching eyes. They never saw how seasons run, now but gape at the sun. Come, let us mock at the good, that fancied goodness might be gay and sick of solitude might proclaim a holiday. Mock mockers after that, that would not help the good, the wise, the great, that would not lift a hand to help the good, the wise, the great, to bow that foul storm out, the foul storm of mockery. For we traffic in mockery. Right? I mean, this is a mocking age, and that's what he was talking about. So, you know, it's best to avoid people like that, kafenak and mustahzeen. Allah says, we'll take care of the mockers, right? Allah says, we'll take care of the mockers. It's a very low group to be in. You don't want to be in the people of istihzat, huzu. In fact, when Musa, when they accused him of being, of mocking them, he said, "A'udhu billahi in akuna min al-jahileen." I seek refuge that I should be an ignorant person. So the mocker is actually an ignorant person. They're just displaying their ignorance in mocking. And you should always have compassion for people. I mean, the worst people are people that mock handicapped people and make fun of people. You know, you have comedians that just make fun of people that have Alzheimer's disease or who have handicaps, you know, stuttering or whatever. They just make fun of them. It's really dangerous to do that. So may Allah protect us from the mockers.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parsetoday.ir.
رجائي بالرضا والخير أنير طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير
يا الله يا رحمن حقق أمانينا وفقنا في كل آن في مسائنا.
Welcome back, dear listeners. In continuation to what we were talking about, which was this idea that, you know, sometimes we think that we have a long life ahead of us, and because of that, we tend to procrastinate and leave off certain things that must be done at the present time. In the previous segment, we talked about how one of the things that must be done at the present time, and every single one of us must do, of course, is to ask for forgiveness from the Almighty Allah for the various conscious or unconscious, voluntary or involuntary sins that we might have committed, not only in the present day, but in the past as well. And so, of course, this asking for forgiveness purifies us, it cleanses us, and of course, it brings us closer to the ultimate form of ubudiyah and the ultimate form of the servitude and the worship and the obedience to the Almighty Allah. Now, sometimes we find that if we don't pay attention to what we are doing, and of course we kind of leave it off for a later time, and we don't perfect what we are doing for the cause of Allah and for the sake of Allah, that later on down the line we realize that all of it was of no use. So one of the things here that we would like to speak about is the idea of the daily prayers. Now, you can spend, you know, your whole life praying the five daily prayers, but if it's not done in a certain manner, of course, which includes being able to focus on what you are doing, paying attention to what you are doing it with sincerity, doing it with a presence of mind and soul. If we don't do this, then after 40 or 50 years, we will realize that all of these years of worship that we had been doing, in reality, didn't really get anywhere. It wasn't that valuable for us. So what's the lesson? The lesson is that in this 40 or 50 years in which we are worshiping the Almighty Allah, or for that matter, we are doing any kind of worship or any kind of obedience or ubudiyah to the Almighty Allah, we have to do it, of course, with a sincere intention, with good motivation. We need to do it happily, you know, with excitement, with eagerness, with fervor, with zest. And at the same time, we need to really pay attention to what we're doing. We need to focus on what we're doing so that 50 or 60 years down the line, we will really be able to see the different kinds of benefits that we have acquired. But of course, if we leave that paying attention to and that focus of our namaz for 50 years down the line and we procrastinate in the present day, then of course we will find later on down the line that we did not reach that place where we wanted to reach as far as our ubudiyah is concerned. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at farstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
احتمي بحماه حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله حسبنا الله حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل حسبنا الله حسبنا الله حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Hostility towards France is sweeping many parts of Africa as masses in the continent revolt against this neocolonial power. Now, the most recent action in this regard was the move by the Burkina Faso government to expel the ambassador of France to the West African country. Now, the decision came after several protests outside the embassy of France in the capital, Ouagadougou. A Burkinabe protester here demands the ejection of France from his country.
We don't want France. The French presence in Burkina Faso hurts us. Soon they will leave. Down with France, down with the rotten generals, down with the rotten colonels. We want the one who wants to save Burkina. If Europe could save our country, it wouldn't be here. The people were not going to leave.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of news and events making headlines in Africa. Today, we are focusing on the move by Burkina Faso to eject the ambassador of France in the country in response to demands by the masses who believe France is the source of insecurity in this country. In the second part of our program, we shall look into the worsening diplomatic standoff between Algeria and Morocco and ask, what is the reason behind the growing animosity between these two neighboring North African countries? Stay with us as our experts give us their insight.
France unwanted in Burkina Faso. Early January, Burkina Faso's government expelled France's ambassador to the West African country amid deteriorating bilateral relations. Government spokesman Jean-Emmanuel Ouédraogo confirmed that Ambassador Luc Halade was asked to leave, but provided no further details. Halade's expulsion came days after Burkina Faso authorities expelled two French nationals, accusing them of espionage.
In January 2022, the military in Burkina Faso ousted President Roch Marc Kabore. Amid growing insecurity, a second coup was staged in September 2022 by angry soldiers led by Captain Ibrahim Traoré, who deposed Lieutenant Colonel Paul-Henri Sandaogo-Damiba. Now, the people of Burkina Faso have protested several times in front of the French embassy, accusing Paris of plotting a comeback for Sandaogo-Damiba.
Damiba is pro-French. He has destroyed Burkina Faso. But thanks to God, we have a great strong man like Ibrahim Traoré to save us all.
Now, to discuss the animosity towards France in Burkina Faso, we have contacted Mustafa Traoré. He's an academic and political analyst and also the founder of anopeneye.org. Thanks a lot, sir, for your time today.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure.
Now, what was the real reason behind the expulsion of the French ambassador to Burkina Faso?
I think it is more the population of Burkina Faso asking for it. We know that they are very disappointed with the presence of the French military on their soil. The French came in 2012-13 to fight against the jihadists who had tried to invade Mali, so which meant that the threat first was in Mali, it was concentrated in just one country, and it seems that with the arrival of the French, now you have the, let's say, the plague spread in many other countries like Burkina Faso, Niger, and so on. So people are asking themselves questions, and they are asking also questions about who are those providing the terrorists with weapons, with technology, with phones, with money, with this African currency we call the franc CFA. So people kind of see some kind of correlation between the presence of the French army and the terrorists. And this is one of the reasons why they are asking for the departure of the French army.
Angry protesters targeted the French embassy, cultural center and military base in Burkina Faso on the day of the second coup. Demonstrators demanded that France leave and called on the interim military authorities to ask Russia for help fighting the rebels, as it is doing in Mali.
But we take into account Russia because in the whole world, it is Russia that has worked positively to remove the terrorist Hydra in Syria, Venezuela, Central African Republic, and neighboring Mali, where we see positive progress.
Opposition to France continues to increase in Burkina Faso. The French embassy in Ouagadougou has been attacked, with protesters demanding the complete departure of French military from Burkina Faso.
There are some very concrete reasons for their discontent, for their asking the French army to leave. many things happened. Sometimes you have the terrorists coming in some of the villages, killing many people. And when they do so, the French does not intervene. So they're asking themselves questions. Okay, how come they destroy and they kill so many people, and the French are there?